after a long, long weekend, and now looks forward to the discussions with the legislature over some reforms in state government to finalize the budget for the coming year. Governor, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Reforms and cuts that we are negotiating right now.
Well, you got quite a few to make, don't you?
Yes, we do. We sure do. We have about $440 million still in cuts, and we're not done with our list of reforms that we've got to work on.
So we've got a higher income tax in place. We've expanded the sales tax to other services. I want to get to some of those in a moment. Some specific questions, though. When do we start paying this increased income tax?
That took immediate effect, so that begins right away. And the sales tax on services begins in December.
Now, when I fill out my state income tax for next year, will the new income tax be in effect for the whole year? In other words, is this going to be retroactive to my earnings for the entire 2007 year?
No. It will start, in your last quarter, obviously, starting on October 1st. You'll be able to deduct that, obviously, on your federal income tax as well. And Frank, I'm sure you have talked about this at length on your show, but the income tax itself is a restoration of the amount that the level was, or actually it's just below what the level was in 1999, but it is temporary, and it will begin to phase out in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time that that income tax went down, we also saw our state sales tax go up by 50%.
No, that was in 92. That income tax, that was, the state income tax at that point was 4.6%. This, in 1999, it was down to 4.4% and started rolling back to now 3.9%, 3.9%. And so this restoration takes it back to 4.35%.
Right, I understand that, yeah. But the sales tax was at 4% and it went to 6%. It was a 50% increase in our sales tax at roughly the exact same time.
In the early 90s, when with Proposal A, you're talking about.
Yes, when all of that went through, our sales tax went up by 50% too.
Right, but that was the trade-off that people voted on to make sure that the property.
Governor, why was there no willingness to trust the people this time around and let them vote on, number one, an increase in the sales tax that could have covered all this, number two, a graduated income tax that you had discussed? Why was there a hesitation to take any of this to the people?
I was certainly willing to do that, Frank. As you know, the Constitution requires two-thirds of votes of the legislature. There wasn't even a majority in the legislature that were willing to put that up. I think, you may have talked with Andy Dillon. He put up on the board for consideration by both parties, both the graduated income tax as well as an increase in the sales tax on the just regular sales tax. It didn't even get majority support to do that. And not a single Republican voted for it. Not a single Republican voted for it in the Senate. It didn't even get put up on the board in the Senate. So for some reason, there wasn't an eagerness to do that, I think in large part because those who are upset now about the service tax did not want to see an increase in the sales tax.
Well, the service tax increase, it touches on so many areas of our economy, including many business-to-business transactions. We're hearing from business people throughout the state who are worried about the impact of this. I mean, the headlines had all of the different categories about bronzing baby shoes and tarot reading and psychics and the like, but when you got down deep into the document, you saw these the bigger issues that are going to raise most of the money in this service tax increase, and that's from business to business transactions, according to the Chamber of Commerce and the Small Business Association.
Right, and the Chamber of Commerce and the Small Business Association were also against raising the sales tax too. The question is, what were we going to select in this combination of cuts, reforms, revenues, and inside the revenues, what are the pieces that would be where you'd have some shared sacrifice among individuals and business, where it's the least painful types of categories. And that list was negotiated in a bipartisan way to take, remember, Frank, when in February when I put out my proposal, it was 2 pennies on all services without, selection of
2%.
2%, right, 2%. And so people didn't like, tickets. They didn't want to see sporting events have that 2%. They didn't want to do haircuts. So it was narrowed down, narrowed to, and then we said just keep it at the 6%, which is what the sales tax is now, and have it on a much narrower group, but split it between businesses and individuals. And that's what ended up being the result, so that the whole burden was not put on individuals for through an income tax increase, that it was split. I mean, individuals end up taking a big chunk of it, obviously, with the income tax and the sales tax on services. But businesses share a bit of that pain as well. So that's the compromise that was reached with the legislature.
But Governor, you know, you've got a degree in business. That when businesses tax, they pass that along. The cost goes to the consumer in the long haul. It's always included in the price of services or goods.
Right. It usually is. Obviously, businesses have to make that judgment call, but usually that's correct.
Yeah. So we're going to pay for that too, as well.
One way or the other, the cost goes up, and the question is, where do you, you know, how does that fit into the grand scheme of things? I think, you know, Tom Walsh had an interesting column, a good column, I think, this morning in the Detroit Free Press, saying, you know, no matter who is in this chair anyway, the state was going to have to deal with this because of the challenges to the economy, and the question is, what's the blend of cuts and taxes that you can put on the table that is least painful? You know, the business community wanted us to do it all in an income tax, because all of the burden then would be specifically on the backs of working people. You know, people were not comfortable with that either. So, and how many, you know, on the cut side, you know, Andy Dillon put up all cuts on the board and nobody voted for that. So, not Republicans or Democrats. So it's, you know, these are tough calls, a tough compromise. We still have $440 million in cuts to do, which is not going to be easy. And next year, we're going to have to continue to downsize, continue to reform, and we've got reforms that we still have not completed.
Well, this is all coming down on the backs of the taxpayers. We just talked about that. Who did you rely on for advice outside of government on which way you should go with your policy here?
Well, we, you know, remember in January, I asked a bipartisan group of people, including Governor Milliken, Governor Blanchard, who chaired it. I included in that John Engler's former budget director. John Engler's former treasurer was part of this panel. The Republican Speaker of the House under Governor Engler, Paul Hillegans, the Republican Senate Majority Leader, Dan DeGroat. I included Frank Kelly on that, former Attorney General Frank Kelly on that group. It was a Mark Murray, who was, as they say, Governor Engler's former treasurer,
right,
business person. It was a bipartisan group that said you have to do this in cuts, reforms, and revenues. They made it clear it had to be a comprehensive solution. You couldn't do it all with one or the other.
But outside of government and politicians, who did you rely on? Did we count on the advice of business people in this and the impact that this might have on people staying or leaving here in Michigan?
Well, certainly believe me, we have been in conversation with the business community. Andy Dillon, Mike Bishop have been in conversation with the business community. We are aware that nobody wants their taxes raised. But on the other hand, nobody wants to see class sizes of 37. Nobody wants to see more law enforcement officers cut from the streets or grandparents cut off of Medicaid. This is a tough series of choices that had to be made. If you don't do the sales tax on services, then you have to put the whole thing through an income tax. Is that the wisest choice? You know, this is the balance that was struck. The sales tax on services was narrowed to a much smaller group of, you know, discretionary services. You know, could you have included other things and taken some off the list? Sure, it was negotiated a series of services that were put on the list. But in the end, it had to be that everybody had to share in this so that we could move the state forward and get to the next conversation, which I hope we can have, Frank, which is, and perhaps not today, but the next conversation is how we diversify this economy.
Well, Governor, we should have that discussion, because I'm not sure government is equipped to do that. The private industry is, entrepreneurs are, and they're the ones that we need to draw with the favorable tax policy.
I absolutely agree with you on that. And just quickly on that particular subject, when people say, you know, the service tax in Michigan will scare people out of Michigan, you know, there are, we were, before this tax, we already taxed services. We taxed 28 of them. They didn't scare those services that we taxed out of Michigan, because many services obviously have to be done there where people are, because they are by nature more connected to people. But we are now 27th in the country. We're still below the national average in terms of the services that we tax. This is something that other states have done before we've done it. Our Midwestern neighbors tax far more services than we do even now with this expanded list, Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota, far more services.
But we're seventh or eighth in total tax collections at $23 billion
no,
a year.
No, no, no. Where do you get that, Frank?
U.S. Census Bureau, 2006.
No, the Census Bureau statistics has us in the middle of the pack in terms of our per capita, per person.
We're 18th in per capita tax collections.
I'm not sure where you're getting that.
It's right on the U.S. Census Bureau website. You can access it, Michigan 2006.
The U.S. Census Bureau.
I looked at it again this morning.
The U.S. Census Bureau, I don't know exactly what you're comparing, but the U.S. Census Bureau also has us as middle of the pack in terms of overall state and local tax burden. We're not a stick-out state. In fact, our income tax, as it's been restored, puts us as a rate at fourth lowest in the nation. So it's Michigan, and Tom Walsh says this in the Free Press column today, we have not been a high tax state. Unlike they didn't like the structure of the business tax, and that's been reformed now with the Michigan business tax.
Governor, are we done taxing? We've only got a couple minutes left. Are we done with tax increase? I mean, we kicked $700 million, according to Nolan Finley in the Detroit News, from last year's budget into this one.
Yes.
Bob Klein, your treasurer, has already said we're going to face a deficit next year.
Yeah.
We're going right down the same road, aren't we?
No, we are not. We are not. Believe me, this is why there hasn't been general tax increases in Michigan for 30 years, because it is so hard to get an increase because nobody wants to do it. This is it. We are not going to see other general tax increases in Michigan. I'm done. But this allows us to move forward, and we're going to still have to do cuts. We're going to still have to do reforms. But believe me, this will put us on the footing that we need to be on to be able to move forward and make the investments we need to diversify.
But Governor, during the last campaign, you told us no tax increase, and we got one anyways. And
made a pledge like that, Frank. I never made a pledge like that.
Governor, we've been playing the cut throughout this discussion during the last month or so of you in October being asked by Stephen Clark, are you going to increase the sales or service tax? And you said, no, I will not.
No, I answered that because I thought he said the sales tax, and I thought that was not about the service tax, at least as I answered that question, because I reviewed the clip too. It was about the sales tax. It was not about the service tax.
Well, let's listen to it. I didn't want to do this, but I do want to be clear on
this.
Okay.
Keeping in mind that at 6%, Michigan sales tax is among the lowest in the region. Would you consider raising it to 7 or 8% or consider a tax on services?
No, I would not.
That was and I was responding to the sales tax.
He pretty clearly said a tax on services.
Yeah, I know he did, but be clear, I have not been opposed to spreading the sales tax on services. I was opposed to raising the sales tax. I wouldn't have opposed putting it to the voters. That was giving them a choice to do that. But that particular clip, what I was listening to and what I responded to was the increase in the sales tax.
But what we heard as residents was, you're not going to raise our taxes when we voted for you.
Well, Frank, the circumstances are that I was not going to slash public education, public safety, and health care either. And I made that very, very clear. We were facing a huge deficit, a structural deficit. Anybody who was elected in that last election would have to be faced with choices like these. And I chose to put my stake in the ground to not slash people off of health care, to not slash public education, and to not slash public safety, and to find a comprehensive solution that allowed us to be able to do this with cuts, reforms, and revenues. And that's why I asked for this bipartisan panel to make sure that we were doing this in the right way, with people who had been there before, people who knew what we needed to do to it, to make our state competitive in benchmarking Michigan against other states. We weren't going to be a stick-out state. We weren't going to do something that made us chase people away as compared to what other states are doing in service taxes or in income tax. So this is the solution that was reached in a bipartisan way with the legislature. It's a comprehensive solution. Now I hope we can move on to other things.
But Governor, isn't it a matter of trust with the residents? When they hear what you said in the interview back then for the campaign, no taxes, and now you say, well, I didn't hear the question right. Then we had no more no-bid contracts in the state. And the next thing we know, we're getting a new state police headquarters on a no-bid contract that benefits a campaign contributor of yours. And your explanation was that it doesn't apply to land deals. And all these exceptions, doesn't it create a problem of trust with the residents?
Frank, that contract, that developer, that bid, that deal was selected by John Engler. That was a deal that he made, that I waited 4 years to execute on because it was too big. I narrowed it down. It made it much smaller. We spread it out in a way that we could afford it. We knew we had to have a new headquarters. The building is 70 years old. We pay $500,000 every single year on maintenance. We've consolidated state police functions into this new building to try to save and make it as small as possible. So this, you know, the issue of making sure that we do what's right for Michigan and skinny down government in a way that citizens can see that we are smaller is really important, and I think you're very right about that. We have 9,000 fewer employees today, Frank, than we did in 2000.
The state police headquarters is always going to cost us more money per year than what we're spending on the old one. And where's the documentation on John Engler starting this project?
Oh, believe me, this, you can go back and look at all. I mean, he tried to get it through the administrative board. This was a deal that was started by the Engler administration. Everybody knows that. I waited for 4 years so that we could do it in a way that was much smaller.
Why did you go no bid on it?
This was bids are not required under land deals, and this was a deal that was arranged by my predecessor. So I didn't throw out the old deal.
John Engler cut a deal with Joel Ferguson, your campaign contributor on this property that's on a floodplain with no parking and no helipad.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
I'm anxious to hear more on that.
Yeah, please feel free to investigate that because it was a different deal, a much larger deal on that same property, but it is a better deal now, much more affordable.
All right, Governor, time is up. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Always good to talk with you.
All right, thanks, Frank.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Governor Jennifer Granholm here on the Frank Beckman Show.